Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Talk, why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
You know, we never really question whether you really are better off when you're spouting off. We hope so. Anyway, I'm your host, Karen Cataline, and I am just pleased as punch to be with you today. As always, I love doing this show. It's Tuesday, November 14th, 2017, just a week before Thanksgiving already. So if you're buying your turkeys, it's, you got at least some time to thaw it out. I always think it's so weird. It takes like 4 or 5 days to thaw out a turkey. Anyway, we have a lot on the show today. We have a jam-packed show, and I have a lot to spout off about. I'm going to jump right in and tell you that with our little feature, Little Bites of Big Issues, got to do this because there's so much going on. What I think is fascinating is how so many of these things are related to everything else. And that's what makes it not only complicated, but also very, very challenging. So the first thing that's been on my mind is that Trump is back to the swamp, and he is back from his Asia trip. I think he just arrived sometime today. And what was it, about 11 days? We didn't get huge amounts of information. And guess why? Because if it's good, if it's anything that really is positive for the country, and Trump is showing that he's a leader and he has competency, which in my humble opinion, he has a great deal, the media will not report it. So you have to dig really deep to find something negative for the media to report. And I found it. Well, no, they'll report anything negative on Trump that they can possibly report. I have never in my life, there are amazing statistics on this about the percentage of negative media coverage that Donald Trump has gotten in the last 10 months. That's about how long he's been governing, 10 months. And it's astounding, but it's gone off the rails. So here's an example of what the media reported on Trump's Asia trip, because they couldn't afford to report anything positive. The ASEAN handshake is a tradition the leader of every Pacific Rim ally is forced to endure, and President Trump made it awkward. Trump scowled his way through the icebreaker Monday morning in Manila. He twisted his right arm over the left and his left over the right to shake hands with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte and Vietnamese President Tran Dai Quang. Let me try that again. Tran Dai Quang, I think it is. So this is what makes news in the mainstream media, is that he scowled when he made a handshake. Meanwhile, and I don't have this sound, I do apologize, Chucky Schumer said what an embarrassment he was as he went overseas. It is astounding to me. I wonder if people, it's too bad we don't have tape of what people did 100 and 200 years ago that were supposed statesmen. And they referred to the opposition president as an embarrassment as they went overseas. Chuck Schumer ought to be embarrassed, but sadly, he is not. So here's what I have to say to Chuck Schumer. Lately, there's been a fairly reliable Rasmussen poll, the daily presidential tracking poll. No matter what they do to this man, no matter how much they demean and they deceive the public about lies about this president, and he is not a saint. He's not perfect. But guess what? He's a leader, and we didn't have that before. No matter what they do, Trump's numbers are going up. So 46% of likely U.S. voters approve of the president and his job performance. So no matter what they do, they just can't seem to destroy Donald Trump. As we speak, I heard on the news before I was getting ready to talk to you that the opposition is claiming that they now have to review the president's rules and abilities to start nuclear war, to have his finger on the button, because they're going to claim that Donald Trump is incompetent and unfit. Never in my life have I seen such a bunch of incompetence and unfit people trying to accuse a president of that. And frankly, it's exactly what you would imagine. It shows just how violently opposed they are that Trump gets to them this way. If we had an incompetent Republican president, they wouldn't be losing their lunch over this guy. Here's another one for Chuck Schumer. Consumer confidence in October. The index increased to its highest level in almost 17 years. Director of Economic Indicators at the Conference Board said in a statement that was in December 2000 when the index hit 128.6. I'm not real great about those kind of numbers. I don't know what it means. All I know is that consumer confidence is up 17, up higher than it's been in 17 years. Okay, in 9 months, nearly 1.5 million people dropped off the food stamp rolls. How about that? Oh, and we've been quickly destroying ISIS since Obama left. Now, these are the stories you're not going to hear, because no matter what happens, they must report only negatives with Trump. And they will continue to do that for the following year. So if you're like me and you get sick of it, well, get ready, because it is not going to change. The Democrats and the establishment Republicans believe that they can keep this going until the 2018 election, and that's what they mean to do. So that's what I have to say about that. I think that's enough on that issue. Okay. Now, and a totally different issue, a little bite of a big issue, is this little tidbit. 12-year-old girl sues the attorney general, that's Jeff Sessions, the U.S. Attorney General, for legal weed. So she's suing for medical marijuana because, and this may in fact be true, Alexis Bortel suffers from epileptic seizures and wasn't getting relief from standard treatment. Her doctors in Texas recommended brain surgery to correct the problem, but the Bortel family decided to move to Colorado to try medical marijuana. Now, it's legal in Colorado, both medical and recreational, up to an ounce. What I find interesting about the story, and in future episodes of Spouting Off, I have a lot to say about marijuana. I think I have thought for years that it should be legal. But I certainly didn't think that the government should be the biggest drug pusher as it relates to marijuana. So, and that's exactly what has happened. I think eventually it will be legal in all 50 states, or at least 48. And it will be legal not because it's the right or the wrong thing to do, but because it makes money for the government. And if you are a person that is for limited government, I said I wasn't going to talk about this, and here I am talking about it. But if you are a person who believes in limited government, the last thing you want to do is give the government more money to empower itself and impose its will on you. That is one of the core issues of conservative thought, is limiting government so that individuals can be in charge of their own life, even when they make mistakes, and not the government. So the reason I find this an interesting story for our little bites of big issues is because the 12-year-old girl just happens to be the daughter of a grower of federally registered hemp in Colorado. I'm shocked. I'm utterly shocked. She's the daughter, and so she decided to sue the U.S. Attorney General on legal marijuana. Never mind the fact that she can have the medical marijuana or even recreational marijuana if she so chose, but she's suing the AG, the federal AG. Why is this important? Because it touches on an issue that drives me crazy. And I'm going to keep a file of these stories because there's an infinite number of them of children being used for adults' political agendas. That's what's really going on here. You may agree or not agree with the subject matter at hand, but I wrote a whole book about adults who use their children for their own needs, be it for recognition, for political agendas, and thrusting children into adulthood for reasons not of the child's making. And we find this in a myriad of ways today. Not only is it bad for the child. Now, in this case, look, if she wants to sue the U.S. Attorney General, you know, who am I to tell her not to? But I'm suggesting that she's been put up to it by her father, who has a financial and political axe to grind. So that's my thought on that. In future programs, I'm going to talk a lot
this
more about that
because
it's a subject that just keeps bothering me. Before I continue with Little Bites of Big Issues, I'm going to give you the phone number, and then I'm going to tell you what the main issue we're going to tackle today is, but I'm not done with our Little Bites yet. So if you'd like to get in on the conversation, if you'd like to join me, agree with me, which is fine, disagree with me is even better. I love that. Or if you just want to tell me happy Thanksgiving, I don't care. But here are the numbers. It's 888-627-6008 or direct. You can find me at 323-744-4831. And this is BBS Station 1. So if you go to the website of bbsradio.com, you just go to Station 1 and you click on the little button. And if you're listening online, and thank you for that, you had to click on the play button. The great thing about BBS is that you can also listen to my show and other BBS shows by calling on the telephone. So there's lots of ways to participate. Okay, next issue. Not a lot to tell you about this other than Colin Kaepernick is on the cover of GQ this month. Now, don't forget, this is the same Colin Kaepernick who has pigs on his socks to connote police officers. He started the kneeling in the NFL, which I vigorously oppose. And I don't oppose it because I don't think that he has a right to think whatever ignorant thing he wants to think. I oppose it because it's horribly misguided, confusing to say the least, and doesn't even make the point he wants. I suppose you could say that he's contributed to Americans' patriotism by doing so, because a lot of people found out what the line over which they weren't willing to cross was, which was, you know what, I may be a football fan, I might love the NFL, but I love my country more. Besides which, it is a fallacy and a phony smear to say that police officers are systemically racist. And we have covered that in previous shows, but it's appalling. And a lot of people aren't too happy about the fact that Colin Kaepernick is on the cover of GQ. From what I hear, because I don't read GQ, GQ is a dying magazine. And maybe that's why they decided to do it, because perhaps they thought it would get them a little press. And here we are talking about it. So I guess it's getting them a little press. Okay, next subject. We're moving right along here. Today, Attorney General Sessions testified before the House Judiciary Committee, and I was singularly unimpressed. He announced before this that he's considering a special prosecutor on the Uranium One issue. I love it. You announce that you're considering. This is the snail's pace of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. You know, I used to like General AG Sessions. I really did. Obviously, the 12-year-old girl doesn't really like him too much. But I like him a whole lot less. Remember at the beginning of the campaign, Donald Trump talked about, who was it? Oh, Jeb Bush. Oh, God. Thank you, Donald Trump, for getting rid of Jeb Bush on the national stage. He said Jeb Bush was low energy. Well, I think Jeff Sessions makes Jeb Bush look like the Energizer Bunny. I have never seen such low energy. This is a man who's considering a special prosecutor on Uranium One. He needs to go. I have, and I'm not the first person to think this, but I thought it independently of Rush Limbaugh, who is a king in my mind. I don't always agree with Rush Limbaugh, but he's a smart man. I think Jeff Sessions needs to go back to his old job as senator, and then we could dispense with the whole Roy Moore issue, which we are going to talk about at some length today. As you know, for those of you who have been living under a rock, Judge Roy Moore has been accused of sexual harassment, sexual misconduct. This is after he beat Luther Strange in a primary and is expected to win the Alabama seat that was vacated by now Attorney General Jeff Sessions. So I don't know. I think there's a little bit of a political agenda here. Do you think? We're going to talk about that. But I just wanted to mention Jeff Sessions. And if he would just go back to his old seat, then maybe we could get an attorney general with a little bit of a pulse. Okay. I think I'm sort of done on that for now. And finally, our final little bite of big issues is the following. Transracial man was born white, but identifies as Filipino. Did you see this? Despite being born white, a Florida man says he feels more comfortable leading life as a Filipino. So he's renamed himself. His name used to be Adam. Now it's Jadu. Said he considers himself to be, are you ready? I'm sorry. It's transracial, a term that describes someone who was born one race or ethnicity, but identifies as another. I have news for Jadu. First off, being born in the Philippines is not a race. So you're going to have to think of another term, maybe transcontinental, country, I don't know. But he claims to have come to the realization after learning about Filipino life for years. Now, I don't know why it is that if you admire something, you have to become it. Why not just admire it? That goes to my theory of a lack of boundaries that people have in this country. You know, they think that if they enjoy something, they have to be it. Sort of reminds me of the people that have plastic surgery so they can look like their favorite celebrity. Scary stuff. What does that say about who they are? Not only do they not know who they are, but it means that whatever unique individual self they are means nothing, right? So I'm kind of a fan of getting to know who you are and admiring people from afar. But nonetheless, this story, I wouldn't say it tickled me, but it got my attention because today we're living in such crazy times where you can identify with whatever you want, right? If you identify with being a male and you're female, you can use the male's bathroom and vice versa. So you can be whatever you wish to be in your own mind. One of the things that I thought goes along with this in a frightening but amusing sort of way is that the left continually gives us new terms for things. They're constantly giving us new terms, like, well, we used the term snowflake, but that was because they're sensitive about everything. And, you know, if a conservative walks onto a campus, any college campus today, with the exception of maybe two in the country, Hillsdale College, to name one, and that's why they advertise on our program. But I digress. If you walk onto a college campus, there are people, there are leftists, socialists, communists who will riot because they'll say you're being offensive by talking about something that they disagree with. This is outrageous. It's wholly un-American, and it's frankly unhinged. But what I think is really interesting is the left has given us a term called cultural appropriation. I can't even say it. I had to look it up because it's so ridiculous. This is, if you remember a couple of weeks ago when I talked about Halloween costumes, it was offensive to have like an Indian costume or a wall. That was the most offensive if you came dressed as Trump's wall. This is a problem. But it's offensive to dress as somebody else's culture. So let me read this to you. The neutrality. Oh, wait. Okay. Hold on. So cultural appropriation can also be called cultural misappropriation. Okay. So why is that the same? Is that kind of like jumbo shrimp? Okay. So cultural appropriation is a concept in sociology dealing with the adoption of the elements of one culture by members of another culture. Often framed as cultural misappropriation, it's sometimes portrayed as harmful and is claimed to be a violation of the collective intellectual property rights of the originating culture. Boy, you know, you got to be really crazy to be a leftist, you know? You never, ever sleep. You're never relaxed. You can never just use plain everyday language. But how fascinating is it that the left has given us trans whatever, identifying as whatever you wish, like Rachel Dolezal, I think is how you pronounce her name, who made news about a year ago by saying that she identifies as a black person, and therefore she had been going around telling everyone she was a black person for the longest time, and people quite obviously and quite reasonably laughed at her, and we haven't heard much from Rachel lately. But nonetheless, this idea that you can identify with whatever you want. If you want to identify with being rich, you can just take from other people. If you want to identify with living in, I'd like to identify with living in New York, but only half the time. And then I could be like Samantha in Bewitched and twiddle my nose. I am showing my age. I can twitch my nose and live in the suburbs or in a rural area the rest of the time. No, there's reality and there's fantasy. And when you're trying to identify with something, like identifying with a Filipino, isn't that cultural appropriation? Or as I guess we have to say, cultural misappropriation? What is the left to do when they give us all these terms and then they contradict each other? Frankly, that is a little of what our main topic is going to be. And I know I've built it up quite a bit, but that's part of the problem, is that we take on these terms from the left because they're constantly trying to redefine our language with terms like identify with or systemic racism or hate speech, none of which is in line with the Constitution. And then all of a sudden, their leftist gobbledygook starts to contradict itself, like in the case of transracial and cultural appropriation. So let me ask, you know, maybe you should ask your leftist friends out there, or the ones that you have turkey dinner with, Thanksgiving dinner next week, is how do you keep track? Do we need like a new dictionary? I'm being facetious. The truth of the matter is we need to say no to all of this nonsense and start speaking in plain language, in plain terms. And when you take on the left's insane cultural misappropriation of the language, did I say that? Yes. When you take on their misappropriation of the language, you are allowed, you're giving credence and validation to their nonsense. So here's my message to you. Don't do that. Don't do that. If I could tell the Republican establishment a lot, I would say, please stop trying to please these people. They will never be pleased. It's much more complicated than that. But the truth is, they're never going to be pleased. So stop it already. When people use terms like, I identify as, the best thing to do is to laugh at them. You know, I know that's politically incorrect, but that's the point. Laugh at them. You know, oh, well, okay. What were you born as? there's a whole dictionary filled with leftist terminology that they have tried to push down our throat. And the only way that you can really push back on some of this stuff is to refuse to use it and to laugh at it about how ridiculous it is. The other thing I meant to mention, and we're going to take a break in a little bit, and then I'll tease and tell you what I'm going to spout off about for the rest of the hour, is that Donald Trump, that is one of many reasons why Donald Trump is president of the United States today, because he is plain spoken. You know, I used to teach public speaking and presentation skills. I love language. I love words. And people, when I got interested in politics, people were constantly going to media consultants and people to teach them how to speak better and to speak in sound bites and to talk on, you know, the cable news shows. Now, not all of it is terrible. Not all of it is bad. Some people have such trouble communicating and expressing themselves that they need some training. That's okay. But today we have cookie cutter politician people that just don't seem real. They don't seem like they're living in our world at all. And to much, in many extents, they're not. They're really not. And Donald Trump was such a drastic change from the political establishment, the people that are constantly lecturing the rest of us about what is and is not statesmanlike, which frankly has to make me laugh, because the statesmen are the ones that are learning how to lie to us better. And Donald Trump is working very hard against enormous odds on both sides of the aisle, people that want to reverse an election, people that want to stop him from governing, even though we elected him fair and square. They're lecturing all of us on the fact that Donald Trump is not fit to be president of the United States. I think I'd love to live another couple hundred years just so I can see how Donald Trump will be. God willing, our country will be here many hundreds of years longer than we all are. But I want to see how Donald Trump will be looked upon by history, because he's not even been there a year. And I think that he is such a drastic change, such an immense improvement on the lying corruption that is the swamp in Washington, that is the reason he's inspiring such hatred. That is the reason why people are willing to call him crazy, insane, unfit. They've tried to brand him a racist and a bigot. They're blaming him. They're going to blame him for Harvey Weinstein and everything else. If they could blame him for the hurricanes, which they tried to blame George W. Bush. I'm not a fan of him. They will do it. So watch out for that. So when we come back, And Doug is waiting with bated breath as I say, okay, when is she going to shut up so we can play a commercial? When we come back, I am going to spout off at some length about sexual harassment in Hollywood, in Washington, all over this country. It seems like we've gone off the rails here. And so I have a lot to say about that. Your calls, if you'd like to join in, 888-627-6008. And we'll be talking a lot more on Spouting Off right after this.
Hi, I'm Corinne, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arn, on the threat of bureaucratic despotism.
One of the chief sponsors of the Dodd-Frank finance reform bill called that legislation, quote, about as important as it gets, because it deals with every single aspect of our lives, end quote. And how does this legislation deal with every aspect of our lives? In the most unconstitutional way. It sets up a board called the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has the power to regulate our economic transactions independently of both the President and Congress. In other words, permanent government employees are placed in charge of us beyond the control of those we elect, the control of we the people. This is a violation of the representative form of government without which there can be no constitutional government.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket constitution and declaration, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Hello. Ah, welcome back. I wasn't sure if I was on there or not. This is Karen Cataline, and you are listening to the second half of Spouting Off. I'm going to jump right in. What has been completely taken all the oxygen out of the room is the story of Judge Roy Moore. Judge Roy Moore, as I mentioned, you probably know, this is a very quickly changing story because he is now the candidate for Senate to take Jeff Sessions' seat from Alabama. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, there are all these women who are coming forward saying that he sexually assaulted them. Now, as far as I can tell, there's really only one that was underage and that really constitutes sexual assault. In Alabama, the age of consent, I believe, is 16. I'm not going to mention the whole story because I have a feeling you probably know, but I am highly suspicious about this story. And here's the thing. A lot of times we get involved in all kinds of stories that are designed to cover up more important issues. And while I think this is true in that case, the story itself is pretty important as well. So every day you're finding new information on women who are either coming forward or Gloria Allred, who is just a, can I say this on the air, a media whore. She was willing to call Donald Trump a rapist. Not true. Not true at all. But it's up to the people of Alabama to decide. And Alabama is an extremely conservative state. And here's part of my take. It's possible for a lot of things to be true at the same time. There are many aspects to this case, which is why I find it fascinating. First, we're applying today's sensibilities, which are pretty horrible and irrational, in my opinion. I think that today's sensibilities have gone off the rails to previous eras. So, like, take, for example, the tearing down of statues, trying to apply what we think about slavery today to our history and trying to erase that history, which, in my opinion, is so absurd and ridiculous, because there's a very famous phrase that if you don't remember history, you're doomed to repeat it. So if you erase history, you have a better chance of repeating all the mistakes. Meanwhile, people are not just one thing. We need to stop looking at people as all good, all bad. Human beings are complex individuals. I don't think you would want to be considered for one thing that you did or didn't do. And it's probably a good idea not to judge others in that way. In this particular case, however, we're talking about 40 years ago. It's a politically charged atmosphere, and it leads to absolutism, where we refuse to tolerate any other point of view, even those from 200 years ago. This is a growing totalitarian kind of a strain that I think is very, very dangerous. If our founders worked very hard to create an atmosphere and a environment in which we all could afford to disagree without being arrested by the government or killed by some political faction. That's our First Amendment. There's a lot in that First Amendment. I encourage you to read it if you haven't lately. It's not ironic that the same people who are starting out by saying that we aren't tolerant enough are running around trying to erase other people's history. So we want to apply the same sensibilities to a man in his 70s to whatever he did and whatever were the sensibilities 30 years ago. This is a problem. Now, Judge Roy Moore may, in fact, have a problem. This is an ongoing story. And one of my problems with the story is that people constantly are pushed to make a determination before they have all the facts. I have a friend, a dear friend, who is very fond of saying, NEI, not enough information. We don't have enough information. Now, in this particular case, we may not get conclusive information because it happened 40 years ago. This is a man who's been elected many times. None of this has ever come out before. Now, I'll play devil's advocate for a moment. I don't have to. The opposing position is, well, nobody made public anything that was going on in Hollywood either. And now all of a sudden you have everything that anybody did for the last 60, 70 years coming out all at once and all now. So part of the lesson that's happening is that people protect each other. Political parties protect each other. Hollywood protects its own. They don't want the embarrassment, so they sweep it under the carpet. So it's not highly convincing that this didn't come out before. I'll tell you what is convincing, though. Here's what really I find convincing. And that is that the establishment Republican Party, or I should say the establishment Republicans in the Republican Party, have quite a motive for getting rid of Judge Roy Moore. They all supported Luther Strange, and Luther Strange was their guy. And yet, Steve Bannon, a guy that the establishment Republicans detest and hate, supported Roy Moore. In fact, Donald Trump supported Roy Moore. It's fascinating to me that now, all of a sudden, within a hair's breadth of having any information, all the establishment Republicans come out and say how Roy Moore should step down. I don't know. I'm just a little suspicious of that. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it was the Republicans who leaked the story to the Washington Post in the first place. Now, do I have any evidence for that? No, I don't. But I'm highly suspicious. Here was the kicker. Here was the one that really, really got me. When Mitch McConnell, the head establishment swamp dweller, a guy who really needs to go, Mitch, go away. When he was asked who maybe could replace Judge Roy Moore, what did he say? Well, you know, I guess Luther Strange could do that. I was laughing out loud. My partner was just saying, what are you laughing about? I said, it's just so rich. In Yiddish, we have a word, chutzpah. It was just chutzpah-matic that Mitch McConnell would say that his candidate who lost should replace the guy that he probably is smearing and has a lot to do with trying to oust. It used to be in politics, at least I think so, that people had bottoms. Once they lost, they were willing to say, okay, I lost. We'll do it next time. We'll get in there and we'll fix it next time. We'll do better. Now people just, you know, work to unseat you if they lose. The all-time greatest thing of all is when Maxine Waters wants to impeach a president who hasn't had a chance to govern yet. Why? Because she's, number one, too ignorant and too foolish to recognize that she lost, that you don't get to impeach somebody just because you don't like them. If that were true, Obama would have been impeached. That said, Judge Moore may, in fact, as I said, have a problem. I said that already. They knew but said nothing with JFK. They knew but said nothing with Teddy Kennedy. They knew but said nothing with Bill Clinton. So this bandwagon is very, very dangerous. Now, I'm overwhelmed with information. I could do 3 hours on this subject, and I may have to. I'll just have to do it in segments. But today, the New York Times had a headline that said they believe Juanita. What did that mean? The New York Times said they believe Juanita Broderick. That was a name that the left and the liberals refused to even utter. If you said 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, this story happened more than 17 years ago, that Bill Clinton had a credible accusation of rape by a woman by the name of Juanita Broderick, you would get blank stares because nobody but nobody would report that. And yet, I have to credit Bill Clinton with one thing. I credit him with making me a political activist because it was that Juanita Broderick story that just made me lose my lunch. I watched the one interview that she did on television, which they had to be forced into broadcasting that interview. I watched her. I'm a former social worker, and I was stunned and horrified that she was extremely credible and nobody wanted to talk about it. This leads me, I'm going to have to talk more about this in future subjects, because the story of Juanita Broderick is a scary, frightening one, and one in which the media wouldn't touch. Why is the New York Times coming forward now after all this time? Well, it appears to be open season on the Clintons now. You may have heard my bonus episode in which I said that Donna Brazile wrote a book and actually said that she was in fear for her life because people have been murdered and that is a conspiracy theory. I'm not much for conspiracy theories, but the deaths are real. What happened there, I don't know. I don't know at all. But for Donna Brazile, who was on the inside, to say she was afraid for her life, that's huge. And so now all of a sudden, if she was so afraid for her life, why is she coming forward now? Now, for the record, she's backpedaled some of that story. But it seems like the Bill and Hillary stock has gone way, way down lately. And the Democrat Party is trying desperately to move on. And they can't because they have this albatross around their neck named Hillary Clinton, who is not only among the most corrupt people ever to run for president, but she won't go away either. She just refuses to go away. If anybody is mentally unstable, it appears to be her because from what I hear, she's still considering running for office. So we'll have to watch that. I saw that Donald Trump was quite excited about that and was hoping that that would be true in 2020. But I'm pretty sure that the Democrats do not want her to run. And that is why they're coming forward with stuff that they knew all along. Now, here's my point about the I Believe Juanita story. Why doesn't the New York Times get held accountable for ignoring and avoiding this story for 17 plus years? They can just come forward one, you know, autumn day and now it's all okay? No, I don't think so. The double standard is breathtaking. Breathtaking. And if you start to look at the left from that perspective, and you probably do, you'll understand the left a whole lot better. I mentioned cleaving to the left's language. And let's be precise for a change about the language of sexual harassment. Now, it seems, I guess, for their own political agenda, in order to advance their agenda, that the Republican establishment has decided to get on the sexual harassment bandwagon. Hey, if it works, do it, right? I think that's their attitude. And by the way, because there is so much that's related to so much else, I don't think it's Donald Trump's language. I don't think that it's what they hate so badly is that, he attacks people and he doesn't seem statesmanlike and they don't like his style. No, that's nonsense. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. Did they like George W. Bush's style, who could hardly put a sentence together? I don't think so. It's all about globalism versus nationalism. It's an ideological split in the party. The Bushes have taken us towards globalism, global, either global capitalism or global socialism, take your pick. I don't know. It's them in charge. That's what globalism means. It means you and I are not in charge of our own country, of our own boundaries, of our own borders, of our own language, or of who comes into the country. None of that is up to us. It's up to the globalists to dictate to all the rest of us. So I think that's why they hate Donald Trump with a purple passion, and it has little to do with all of these excuses they're making. But that's why they don't like to come full circle. That's why they don't like Judge Roy Moore. It's not because they're so perfect and don't have skeletons in their own closet. Heck no. It's because Luther Strange is their guy and Judge Roy Moore is Donald Trump's guy. Ironically, Donald Trump didn't know it, and he was trying to be nice by supporting Luther Strange. But I think he's a little wiser now about that little issue. So, you see, you could go on and on with this stuff. We bought into the definition of sexual harassment hook, line, and sinker. Well, I didn't, but somebody did, and it was the establishment Republicans and the culture. It was always vague what sexual harassment actually is. That's what I wanted to get to, and I'm running out of time, so I got to keep moving. Must we sterilize every aspect of human life, especially in the workplace, so we aren't being offensive and people can't come at us? And 40 years later, you don't have to run for office for that to happen, but it helps. If people are after you, they can come after you 40 years later. I defy anybody who's 70 to not have some skeletons in their closet when they were 30. But that's not really it. It's that it works. That's the real issue. This kind of thing works. Isn't there a difference between rape and locker room talk? Not to liberals and not to the establishment Republicans, if there's someone they want to take down. Would we suddenly start accusing our opponents of hate crimes? Frankly, I think the establishment GOP would and has if he were a proponent of Donald Trump, even though we don't really believe, we don't all march in lockstep, but we don't believe in hate crimes. I mean, murder is a hate crime, right? When you start calling something a hate crime, you're basically saying that some murder is more terrible than other murder. No, your motive is not as important, other than premeditated versus, a murder of passion, which we've had that law on the books all the time, and you still get prosecuted for it. But hate crimes is another one. If there's a theme of this program, it is that the left is constantly trying to win their arguments by redefining the language. That's what they do. They redefine the language and they tell you, well, that word is no longer okay. You've got to use this word. You've got to use that word. So why are we accepting and allowing the co-opting of language? Sexual harassment has always been kind of a debate of sorts. Now, I think it has eventually come to mean that if you tell someone no in the workplace, if they continue, then you're being harassed. But even that is somewhat vague. And I may have to continue this next week, the week before Thanksgiving, because I am running out of time. But I want to mention that what I want to get to is, what is the role of women in all this? We have a tendency to lump all of these big terms together and people lose their mind before they've really analyzed it, they've really thought about it. Now, is sexual harassment and sexual misconduct different with a grown woman than a child? Well, heck yeah, it is. I get really angry when it has to do with children because they're not of the age of consent. But what about adult women? Why are we treating adult women like they're 5 years old today? This happens to be one of my biggest beefs about cultural rot. We treat adults like children, and we treat children like adults. Stay tuned, because I think I'm just going to have to continue. Regardless of what goes on next week, I'm just going to have to continue that thought, because As I said, I wrote a whole book about that. It's called Fat Lash, Food Police, and the Fear of Thin. And it's a memoir of my having been put in child beauty pageants when I was a kid and what I happened to do about it. Nonetheless, if you'd like to learn more about that or about this show or about my background, or if you'd like to communicate with me, whether you're listening to the podcast or whether you're listening live next week, you can find me at my website, www.karencataline.com. I'm on Facebook at Karen Cataline, and that's spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E, the last name. So it's Karen Cataline. Or you can find me on Twitter at Karen Cataline. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio. You make all this possible. I love, love, love doing this. I'm having a blast. Thank you to Wiley Fox. Thank you to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. That's soap dish. I breathed over that. And tune in next week when there will be a whole lot more to spout off about on Spouting Off.